This episode was recorded in July 2020. If you enjoy this podcast, then subscribe to catch all future episodes.
Michael Thomas is with us. How are you?
I'm not too bad, fella. Not too bad. I'm good.
It's dry up north. Go on, sorry.
I'm saying it's dry up north for a change today.
Yeah, to be fair, it's not. It's not, we're down in the sunny south. But yeah, not bad, not bad. What are you up to?
What am I up to? I'm part owner of a company called Phoenix Sports Media Group, and we look after wealth management and investor rescue service.
Yeah, so what?
What? Yes. Yeah. Yes, the ins and outs of it. I'm not really know about it, but yeah, our professional people to look after the wealth management and investor rescue. So if you've been put into schemes and you lost, we're trying to help you in investor rescue. So
to be fair, a lot of footballers have got into difficulties. It seems very, very, very cockeyed to me. I've got to say, number of guys have really suffered badly, haven't they? With bad advice and what have you.
Exactly. You know, that's what we're trying to teach the next generation, not to go fall into the traps we have. You know, people getting close to you, thinking that your friends and their family and they should be working for you. You know, and all we want to show the young next generation is about transparency. You know, you know where your money is, what you're doing with it. You know, so to basically teach them. Yeah.
Is it sports people or is it everybody?
It's sports people and everybody, really. But obviously, because I'm in the sporting world, I know a lot of sporting people, and they need it. A lot of people need it. I needed it, you know. You know, I retired, and all of a sudden, I'm like, where's my money gone? People I trusted, you know, with all this, they've sort of, like, screwed me, you know. So I don't want it happening to the next generation. So, and that's how the business started, really. The players got together and basically spoke their truth. You know, there's a lot of people out there not speaking their truth. And there's a lot of families badly, you know, I mean, basically families wiped out. So we need to try and speak our truth and help the next generation.
How difficult, I wasn't going to dwell on this, but how difficult is it, do you think, for top sportsmen, for footballers, when they come out of football, it can be quite brutal, can't it? Because it kind of stops, simple as that.
Yeah, if you don't exactly, if you don't plan for retirement, you fall off a cliff, really. So for me, it was like that. For me, retired, and then what do I do now? What do I do next? For years, what do I do? And then fell into this, really. So hopefully, you know, it's all about the next generation for me now, just to educate them.
Did you get any advice from PFA or what have you when, or did you think about as a footballer, did you think, oh, I quite fancy doing that next, or did you just think not, or really, not about it?
Not really. I didn't really think about it, and I would have gone into coaching or something like that, but no one in the PFA spoke to us when we were retirement. And that's a good thing about another part of our arm is basically we do education courses, and we do MBAs and people to do second careers for the youngsters. So we put them on courses. So, yeah, it's well needed in the game of sport.
Do you go around and actually speak to people, or do you have people contacting you?
Well, it was going to be. when COVID hit in, yeah, it's basically, you know, it just killed it for us all, really, for now. And we've been doing a lot of Zoom meetings, Zoom calls, like just like this, and, you know, back to school kind of thing. Not really enjoying that too much, but, you know, it has to be done.
What, are you playing at all? Do you keep yourself fit?
No, I just go to the gym, keep myself fit. But now the gym's closed. I started running outside. Then I pulled my calf.
That's an old man's injury, because I have that one.
Yeah, exactly. I thought, oh, I'm okay. Left it for 2 weeks. And then celebrated when Liverpool won. When I was in London, down south, I was celebrating, jumping up and down in the kitchen, and then just dropped to the floor like anything. I ripped it. So, not a good sign.
I always feel like a bit of a stalker when I'm interviewing people, because I look at all your goals and all the news and your Twitter and all that. I kind of find it quite amusing that your Twitter feed is very split, isn't it? I mean, I know you get asked this all the time, but you are incredibly Arsenal, incredibly Liverpool, aren't you? It is, isn't it?
And very much so. And I've always had it since I've been up here. Who do you support? Which side do you support? I'm like, okay, here we go again. You know, it's just like, you know, do you pick between your wife and your family? That's how it is.
Yeah.
I can't split them.
What, were you always going to be a footballer growing up? Is that what you just always wanted to be?
I think a lot of footballers say the same. From an early age, you just go outside playing football in the street with your mates and never stop playing. You know, that's always been my dream. I've even got the interview when I went to secondary school with my mum, and the teacher said, what do you want to do? And it's like, and writing, footballer. And he's like, no, son, you need to just work on your education. Not many people make it. I said, I will. And in the same black and white, and you know, it's quite crazy.
Brilliant. Well, you played with David Rocastle at a young age, didn't you? Was that sort of coming up sort of through boys' teams and things like that?
Yeah, from 13, I think we played each other for our district side, South London Boys. And it was brilliant, you know. And he was fantastic on the right wing, do anything. A very quiet young man. I was quiet too. And the thing about it, when I went to Arsenal at 15, because I never knew anybody went to Arsenal. So it's like, you know, like an elite to get in there, to be something special. Don't, you know. So if they had about 5-6 players my age to be there. So when I got there, I looked around the corner in the dressing room, Dave Rocastle was there.
Brilliant.
Totally quiet for the whole time you play. It was crazy.
What, how tough was it? It's a different generation now, isn't it? I mean, yeah. Was it were the pros hard on you? Was the management hard on you? What was it like?
Oh, it was tough. As being an apprentice, you know, you knew where you stood, especially being an apprentice, learning your trade, and you know, obviously you've heard that so many times. You have to have respect for the older players. Even now, I still have respect for Graham Rixes, the Kenny Sansoms, the players that sort of looked up to. But just trying to go into a dressing room, you had to knock to get into a dressing room. And if you didn't knock, you got crucified. They, you know, they just tie you up or whatever and leave you for dead. That's hard knocks life, isn't it, really? You have to learn and respect people. You know,
did you always have a self-confidence, a self-belief that you would make it, though, despite everything else?
Yeah, I had a feeling, I had a desire. I should be playing the first team very early on, and I knew I should be playing. I nearly made my debut in pre-season at 17, but Donnell was like to Terry Burton, I don't know, if he would play him, but give him that, you know, bring him on up to Scotland, let him see what it's about. And then basically I was a kit man. You know, I've rather been playing than being a kit man, seeing what's going on, but no. So I didn't make my debut till about late 18, just after, 18, 19. Well, the other guys made their debuts at 17 and 18. Rocastle, Tony Adams, Quinny. So no, it was a late one for me.
Were you also aware that you were coming into a very good side?
When George Graham sort of got there, yes. But before that, it wasn't the best Arsenal side before that, under Don Howe and Terry Neill, going through a bad time. They got to the semi-final under, I think, Don. But the club wasn't in a good place at the time.
Did you see though yourself, like David Rocastle, like the Tony Adams, was there a nucleus of young players that must have given you some belief that it was going to get better?
Oh yeah, but you still have to get in the first team to make it feel better. Who knows if you're going to get in the first team? you know, at my first year in apprenticeships, there was Tony Adams, Martin Keown, Gus Caesar, Dave Rocastle in front of me, Martin Hayes. That was a nucleus of who got through at the time. Murph was 2 years younger, so yeah. It's all about, do you get a chance? You know, Martin Keown got the chance under Don Howe and that. Then it was, well, Tony was there first. Then there was, then David Rocastle with Don. Martin Hayes played, I think, under Don as well. And then, you know, now Quinn came and done it on George. And that's, that was the last one of my age group. So I was like, you know.
Yeah. What was that?
I didn't want to be there.
What was he like? Sorry, Matt. Sorry, go on.
No, to be honest, I didn't want to be there at the time, playing that under George. I wanted to... I experienced first-team football with Alan Ball, the late Alan Ball, and it was fantastic down at Portsmouth, and I wanted to stay. And then they were like, no, you're not staying down there. You've got 1 month and that is it. And I was like, no. Oh, that's it. No, you're not going anywhere. You come straight back. And little do I know, I came back, made my debut, 10 minutes in the League Cup semi-final. And then after that, George had a plan for me just to mark Glenn Hoddle, just to follow him around the pitch. Yeah, in the second leg. That was it. I was like, oh, my idol. This is one of my idols. Like, I mean, I admire him. Glenn Hoddle, I'm going to do this, follow him.
Oh. Brilliant. Well, come on, what was he like, George, then?
George was like a Mourinho of today. Hard taskmaster. But George, tactically aware. Unreal, tactically. Man manager was shit. But he had other people to do that for him, didn't he? Like the late Phil Foley, you know.
Yeah.
You know, he was a man that all the players loved. Then you had Stuart
Houston. Sadly missed. Yeah, sadly missed it.
Very much so. Then you had Stuart Houston. So, you know, it didn't really matter to him that he didn't come close to the players. But as long as we respected him and understood what he wanted from us, what we were doing for him, that's what he cared about. And to be honest, he could change a game within 10 minutes for watching it above from the stands and looking down. He'd come downstairs and change it again. By being tactically aware, you know. So yeah.
What you started playing fullback, didn't you? When did you? Were you always a midfielder? Was that always where you're gonna?
Even the Arsenal supporters say that to me. I've done an interview with them, and I was like, "Yo, I'm a midfield player." I said, "No, I've always been I've been a fullback. I came to Arsenal as a fullback." You know, I was told by Wilf Dixon and Steve Burtonshaw, when you're playing the youth team, hopefully we're moving to midfield because we know you can see the game. You know, never happened until George came. You know, so it was a bit kind of weird. I had a season and a half playing fullback. Then they bought the great Lee Dixon, and then I was thinking, what do I do now? Once Lee Dixon got there, but obviously George had a plan, and that was his plan to put me in midfield.
Well, why? You see, we've done brilliantly so far because we've done about 10 minutes now and I've not mentioned...
Oh, you mentioned...
Don't mention it!
No. COVID again.
Don't mention it. Listen, why did you... I mean, you had amazing success. You ended up winning two titles.
Yeah.
Why did you leave?
Liverpool.
No, why did you leave Arsenal?
I left Arsenal because I didn't enjoy football no more. The football as a midfield player is going over your head. And you should know, you play the game. If you play football and you're enjoying playing football, you want it born on the floor. And if it goes over your head, what's the point of taking part? All you're doing is doing doggies and closing down. So that, I just lost the plot. I said, I've had enough now. And... to everyone's amazement, they're like, no, I've had enough. I can't do this no more. So me and George got into battles. Started playing David Ilya. And David Ilya was fantastic. But after a while, you learn when you're young, you get in the team, you enjoy it. But once you understand, hold on, it's getting over my head. I'm not doing much. I'm just running around midfield. You don't enjoy it no more. For me, I didn't enjoy it. George wanted me to sign a new contract all the time, non-stop for over a year and a bit. And I said, no, I'm going to let it run. And that's how it was. It would have run for summer unless Graham Souness didn't sort of, you know, impose himself, said, I want you now.
What was it like having scored that goal to go to Liverpool? Did you get stick from players or fans?
You're always going to get stick. You know, you live in this, that part of the world. You used to live in that part of the world. You know, the red and the blues. The blues took me in. The reds give me a lot of stick. But, you know, but it's good banter. It's all good banter. They were good to me. They were really good to me. So I appreciate that. And I'm still here. As you know, I'm still here. I'm still in the world. So.
But did the goal in the FA Cup final make a difference?
It was a difference, but rather won the league. but seriously, that was my intention to win the league, to give it back to them, really. But it didn't happen. I scored a goal in the cup final. As you said, it appeased them as well. That, you know. They loved it. I loved it. It was every boy's dream at the time, scoring a cup, FA Cup final. I lived that dream. It was great. And then injuries. Injuries after injury.
It was amazing. It was a really bad series of injuries. Did you ever feel at Liverpool, what was the closest you ever felt that you were near the league title?
96, when I was going for the double. That was when... That's when I thought we had it.
You were injury free as well that year, weren't you?
Yeah. Jamie didn't play for a while, kicked him out of the team. And I thought 96, if we could just defend properly, get our mindset on the, you know, and there's a few, like, well, the last 10 games or whatever it was, we would have won the league. Yeah, but United, as usual, come from behind and strong, mentally strong, kept on doing it.
What was the. What was the difference, would you say, between, say, Graham Souness and Roy Evans?
Roy's more calmer. With Souness, just passion, you know, throwing teacups. It doesn't work sometimes with players. You know, that doesn't really work. You need to have both, really, to be honest. Roy had the softly speak to you. But Roy, you know, I mean, sometimes players take the piss out of Roy, and it was wrong. And I didn't like seeing that. The man's a fantastic man, and
great guy.
I felt for him. Really, I really felt for him. But yeah, totally two different people.
Who was Arsenal and Liverpool? Who's your best midfield partner?
Midfield partner, Arsenal. Arsenal, obviously, Ken Richardson. The man was... He changed it. When I think about it, he's the one who changed it at Arsenal. The mentality, especially coming from, you know, being brought up at Everton, then went to Watford. He's desiring training to win all the time and get everybody else to think about winning. He's the one who basically changed it for Arsenal, mentally strong. Liverpool, me and Barnsley, fantastic. Jan Mulberry, fantastic. You know, obviously, me and Barnsley, it's great because he's left-sided and I'm a right-sided player. So it was great. I think, you know, I didn't need to go forward because I knew the full-backs were bombing on. Jason McAtee on one side, Rob Jones on the other. We didn't need to go forward. And if we did, I let Barnsley do it because obviously I can get around the pitch quicker than him. So defending-wise, you know, defensive is true. But, you know, his expertise was going forward and scoring goals and setting things up. You know, you just got to work it out. I could just hold there and just sort of like, you know, cover everywhere. So yeah.
I read that when you left Arsenal, you wanted to go abroad. You ended up with Graham Souness again at Benfica. It sadly didn't turn out the best. Why did you want to go abroad? Do you think your style would have suited it? And where ideally would you have gone?
I would have rather gone to Italy as a younger age. You know, when that would have been ideal for me, I think, at the time, or Spain. But just to learn the language, even when I was in Portugal, everybody spoke English, and they're learning their English on you. So it's like the menus were in English, and I was like, oh, God damn. Italy would have been ideal. Would have been passionate. Spain would have been good, you know. Even France, who knows? You know, that'd have been nice. But it's gone now, isn't it? So you gotta move forward.
What's that? Is that your bleeping or is that me bleeping?
That's me and meeting. Someone sent an email. The meeting.
Don't worry. Don't worry. Okay. I do just a quick run through. Best place, best venue you played at football?
Jeez. God.
Best ground?
Wembley. Right, that old Wembley. Loved it. That's the worst thing they ever done about Wembley. You know, when they built the new Wembley, they made the tunnel halfway line. They should have kept the tunnel. They should have kept the adjustments where it was before. And the walk. Have you been in that walk up?
Yeah. I've been privileged to be there.
Exactly.
I have scored at Wembley, but not in the same kind
That's the best thing about Wembley, you're walking up, you know, that you can hear the noise, but you can't see where it is, you just like hear it. And then you come up, it was amazing. That long walk was the best thing ever, you know.
You don't strike me as the nervous type. Were you a nervous player? Yeah. As in, you know, before a game?
Yeah, I think most players have superstitions. I was the same, like put the shirt on last. That was the thing. Nervous. Until you touch the ball, you're fine. But before that, you're still like, you know, nervous a bit, so yeah, definitely.
Okay, best player you played with?
Oh, you can ask some questions like that. Oh man,
I'll give you a few. You're allowed a few.
God, geez, look at it.
Because everybody'd be ringing you up and going, "How can you not say me?"
I know. Yeah. Look at it. Liverpool.
He'll go mad.
Yeah, I mean, you got Ian Rush, you got Barnsley, you got Robbie Fowler, Manaman. Oh, geez, there's just a few. You know, Arsenal. Tony Adams, the leader, you know, Anders Limpar, David Rocastle, Paul Merson. There's so many, you know.
Yeah. Toughest you played against?
Toughest I played against. Obviously, Gazza's a nightmare to play against. Gazza. It's good playing with him when I was playing for England on the 21s as fullback. It was great. Midfield. Gazza never stops shouting. Oh, never stop. Oh, mad. I'd say definitely Gazza. Barnsley. Remember his first game for Liverpool against Arsenal, first game of the season after his signing. They beat us 2-1 and I was marking him. And typical John Barnes, it was a hard day for me. Just put it that way. Yeah. Hard day for me. Yeah. So yeah.
Okay. Best manager.
Definitely. Obviously, George is the best manager, but I wish he'd been a bit like Roy Evans and sort of let us off the loose a little bit, let us play the Liverpool way. You know, it would have benefited him in the long run, but he didn't. Definitely, best manager was him.
I can't. You see, you always say best goal, but I'm not going to say best goal.
You know what the best goal is. It's definitely the FA Cup final. Come on now, everybody jumped to the FA Cup final goal, didn't they? No one ever dreams of winning a league, do they? Did you?
What? Well, to be fair, do you know what? As I said, I feel like a stalker. When you Google. Michael Thomas goals. You don't get Michael Thomas goals. You get Michael Thomas goal. Everyone. You've got to scroll down about 98 YouTube videos to get. I thought you got. I mean, there was a great goal you scored for Liverpool against Villa at the Kop End.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was a quarter final.
I was on video about 9,022 by the time I got that.
Yeah, the one against Sunderland bent in. Over what's them code over the goalkeeper? Top end. You never see him, but yeah.
You can't. If you Google Michael Thomas goals, you don't get any. You just get Michael Thomas goal.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Sunderland, definitely cup final, FA Cup final.
Brilliant. That's right. I've got to ask you this.
Go on then.
Black Lives Matter. Yeah. Will we see a change? Will we see, is it a line in the sand? Will we finally see a development, an understanding, more opportunity? Or do you believe it will be not a passing phase, because it's more than that, obviously. Is it a line in the sand?
At the moment, everybody's talking. That's the most important thing. You get people talking and thinking about things. You know, seeing that Michael Holden clip 2 days ago.
Brilliant.
That was a mic drop. He summed up in those 4 minutes about, like, you know, and it was brilliant. And that's what it's about, really. It's about people from both sides sharing their stories and, you know, understanding. Education is the most important thing for me. You know, I'm really, really care about education of the young kids. John Barnes is saying education. You tell the truth, then no one can moan about it. So, yeah, I think.
It was astonishing watching Michael Holden, I've got to say. Right. Do you think things, say just for example, as we're talking about football, do you think things will change in football? Do you think we'll see black players in the boardroom on FA committees? And if so, when will we see that?
I'd like to think so, but at the moment, nothing's happening. You know, only the owners can decide that. You know, we can make as much noise as we can, but the owners can decide that, just like the Rooney Rule. Okay, great, you win the Rooney Rule. You interviewed him. That's a box ticks. We just interviewed someone. I still want the man I wanted in the first place, but I've done your thing. I've ticked it, ticked the box, and that's it. I honestly don't know, really. I honestly can't answer that question. You know,
it's politicians eventually who decide, but see things like Marcus Rashford with the school meals. How powerful is a football voice, a black football voice, a BAME football voice in these days?
Growing up as a young kid, black kid, and I love football, my heroes, I look for them first. I look for who played, any black players playing in the team. Clyde Best. I was very young, I knew about Clyde Best. Next one was up Cyril Regis, 3 degrees. I looked up to them, Laurie Cunningham. I looked up to them. Said, if they can do it, I can do it. You need to have somebody up there already doing it. And, you know, I want to, you know, gives you a purpose of trying to make that dream come true. And these are big, massive things. That's why education is so important. You know, when Michael Holden said about the lights, and, you know, did you know that? No one knew that. And it's true. Why isn't it out there? Why isn't it there? He made the light bulb, Edison, but why didn't work? So it's just like, why isn't that there in a curriculum? It should be in the curriculum. The high thing, it's just like the film. What is it called? About NASA, when there's black women save the astronauts. Wow, come on now. That's just so, you know, why was it taking so long to tell the truth? And that's why we get really upset about things like that. It's upsetting me now just thinking about it, because you should be out there on the, you know, every person's lips about history. You know, you can't be one-sided. And obviously it is.
Yeah. Sad,
you know.
Going back to my original point, do you think this might kickstart a proper sea change?
I want it to kickstart a proper sea change, but as I said before, it's up to the people in power. Only they can change it.
Sure.
We can make a lot of noise, but they have to want to change it. You know, politics, they got to change it. They got to change the curriculum. If they don't do that, you know, it's just more protests. And then, you know, I can make a lot of protests, but it needs to do something. And things need to start, you know, start now.
Education.
You know, I'm finding out things, so many things. It's incredible on the net, and people passing things to me, which I didn't know. So it's like, it's wrong. Kids need to know about these things, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, listen, thanks.
Pleasure.
I've got one more question for you.
Go on then.
So how did the goal come about in 89? What did you do?
It was fate, mate, fate. God's on my side. I keep telling people that. That's how it is. It's fate. When you know it. You do know it when it's on, you know, it's going your way, especially after two games before that, Derby, losing to Derby and drawing to Wimbledon. Fate. Imagine that. Hits the ball. I tried to pull it over Steve Nicholls' head. Hits his shoulder, hits me, and goes in the path where I wanted it to go. You know, you can't write that as fate. It's meant to be. It's meant to be.
Hey, it's fate or genius?
No, it's fate. It's genius because it went over. It went in the right place. Put it in, maybe a genius. Putting it last, putting the end touch on it, but definitely fate.
Hey, listen, really lovely talking to you. Thanks a lot. Hopefully, I'll catch up with you in person soon.
Okay, mate. No problem, mate. Just pass on anybody who needs help on Phoenix.
I will do. Yeah, no, I will do. And the thing is, I'm saying to people, we're doing this channel.
Yeah.
Anything you want to, you know, come on and talk about, advertise, bring your business partners on, whatever. Yeah. More than happy to, you know, to chat about it. Yeah. It's good publicity for you and also good content for us. Anytime, mate.
Definitely. Cheers, mate. No prob.
Hey, Michael. Lovely talking to you. Take care, pal.
All right, mate. Take care. Cheers, pal.
See you, mate. Cheers.